4 o'clock.
Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to welcome you to On Point on this beautiful day in Minneapolis with my co-host in Studio A, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you today?
Fighting a cold, Don. This weather has been a monster. I'm surprised at you saying this nice day in the Twin Cities. To our listeners, both domestic and international, it is a weather catastrophe. It snowed last night and early this morning here in the Twin Cities. Temperatures around 36 or 37 degrees. Winds out of the northwest at probably almost 40 miles an hour. Feels like mid-November. It's just ridiculous. We don't even know what spring looks like in this part of the country, if you will. But hey, this is Minnesota, so you know you got to deal with what you got to deal with, if you will. But Don, what's going on? Say, look, right off the top, very positive event last night in Washington D.C. A local Minnesota citizen is the guest at dinner with President and First Lady Michelle Obama. Nice play in the Washington papers, nice story in yesterday's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune. Dr. Timothy Childs, real success story, but you know, it's really been a well-hid kind of story here in our community. I've not heard many of our leaders talk in the affirmative of the kinds of programs and et cetera that Dr. Childs is involved with, but I got to tell you, a lot of talk, a lot of tweets across the country with respect to the event last night in Washington.
Yes, I agree 100%. There was a great article in the Star Tribune, Obama to salute local businessmen's work with kids. And Dr. Childs, he runs a high-tech wafer for-profit company that...
Now, what does that mean? What does wafer mean for our less than technical listening audience around the world?
They are that go into solar panels. There's these little tiny components that, for lack of a better term, for me, and I guess for them too, they call them wafers. And they're for solar panels. There's military use. There's medical use. There's all kind of implementations for this particular technology.
Use them on satellites, things like that.
Satellites, guided missiles.
Right.
It's just a lot of things that this guy does there, and he's been very successful. I know at North Minneapolis Economic Summit, he had said that he got a $1.8 billion contract from the Chinese government. Yes. And,
he's out of originally out of Miami, Florida, as I understand.
Yes, sir.
Graduate from Florida A&M, and his doctor's from in physics from Stanford, out in California. Okay, real good credentials. I guess what some of our black congressional leadership made him known to the president.
It was actually Governor Mark Dayton's office who was very impressed with him at the economic summit.
Oh, okay.
And the way the story goes, Mr. Edwards, he was sent an email, and his like person in charge of the foundation, that kind of is his person Friday, was checking to see if this email was real, because it says you've been invited to have dinner with President and Michelle Obama. They thought someone was playing a joke with him, right?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the governor's office actually called them and confirmed it and says, you guys need to confirm that right away. And so they confirmed it and had dinner last night. And they're still in Washington, will not be back till Tuesday.
Okay. Now, this wasn't one of these quote-unquote big state kind of dinners with 400 people in a room. I understand this was a very private gathering.
Yes,
the president and the first lady. Is that correct?
Exactly. It's a one-on-one, some FaceTime with the president because of the success this gentleman has had, Dr. Childs, and what he's doing here in the Twin Cities. Which, like you said from the start of the show, Mr. Edwards, that we haven't heard much about this. You know what's going on here. You know I know some community leaders are batting their eyes, but we also, Mr. Edwards, we have Mr. Wesley Smith on the line, who works closely with Dr. Childs and his foundation, and he happened to be at the office both times I was there. And Mr. Smith,
hey, how you doing?
All right. Welcome to On Point. You're broadcasting live here. Why don't you give us a little, tell us about yourself, and then let's talk about Dr. Childs and his foundation, or whatever you prefer.
Okay. Well, first, let me extend my greetings to Mr. Edwards and to tell him that I enjoy the show very much.
Thank you, sir.
Very much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I've only been working with Dr. Childs a short time. How I came to meet him is because some of the work that I do is kind of associated. What I do is I turn dropouts into drop-ins.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is that over the past 3 years, in being an enrollment support specialist, independent contractor with different schools, I've ran across a lot of high school students who want to get back in school or who've dropped out for reasons, maybe zero tolerance or some other reasons. But nonetheless, even if I did not have a contract with a particular school, I would still get these kids back in school. Some of them now have went on to college, and over the last 3 years, there's been over 150 students whom I've gotten back in school. And so he was doing a mentoring and tutoring program, and this is how I kind of met him. I kind of met him through my son. My son was telling me about him because he knows his daughter real well. And so with these kids that I was putting back in school, some of them, they dropped out for that reason. It's because academically they were not able to keep up, and they needed some additional help. I don't need to tell either one of you how these quote-unquote tutoring programs have failed our children. And he's been successful in his tutoring piece. Some of the students that I've gotten back in school have went on to go to college as a result of his services.
But let me just say this. One of the things that I was pleasantly surprised of was in regards to, and one of his students, and I've known the family, in fact, knew this young man's father when he came here to play for the University of Minnesota many, many years ago, Marion Barber, who is currently with the Dallas Cowboys of the National Football League. And I can well remember when young Mr. Barber was a outstanding athlete and running back at Wayzata. And I, you know, really had no clue, no understanding that this kind of reaching out was going on. Also, I noticed that Dr. Childs has facilitated himself to the adoption of how many young people is it? What's the actual number?
I don't know the actual number, but there's a lot of kids.
It's 12.
I think it was somewhere around 12. Yeah,
it's
somewhere
12.
Around 12. It was somewhere around
okay.
12.
Okay. He's adopted 12 children.
Yes.
Brought them into his household and made them a part of his very successful life. You know, that's outstanding within itself.
Well, the other thing about him is that I need to say that he is, I mean, he is one of the most humble individuals that it is. And the reason that he's what some people are deeming as a best-kept secret is because he's not really a horn tutor. His work is what speaks for him.
Okay.
A lot of people on the north side, it came to their surprise and to their shock. You know, like, who is this guy? Who, you know, I mean, well, you know who these other people are, and you know what they've done and not done. Well, here's now you hear of someone who's been doing the work and who's not been out front, so to speak, or tooting his horn or begging the government or anybody else for any money. You know, again, he's been getting the work done without that money that all these other so-called leaders, as you mentioned at the top of the show, has been running and fighting and lobbying for all this time. He supports the foundation through his company.
Tell us a little bit about the foundation and then a little bit about his company for our domestic and international audience. First of all, his foundation.
His foundation, again, as I said before, which is funded by his company, is ran by Ms. Yolanda Friday. And what they do is they have about four sites in Wayzata, St. Paul, and there's a couple other places where they tutor kids, and I mean they really tutor these kids. And they get them college ready. When I say college ready, I mean they go through the preparations. They don't go to this annually sponsored Black College Tour. They put one on themselves. They go to different sites. Most recently, one of the field trips, and my son was able to partake in it. They went to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, and they had FaceTime with doctors, and they was able to ask questions about different things. Now my son, he's a sophomore in high school. He's interested in law. He came away from Rochester so excited, and he was talking to me about that because he wanted to just learn law. He didn't necessarily want to be a lawyer. He wanted to learn law. You know how kids are. They just want to conquer a subject and just to have it to be able to use whenever they want to, just like they learn a video game or something.
Yes.
He came away from there talking to me about medical law. And, I mean, he was very intrigued. You know, the look in his face, the excitement, the enthusiasm in his voice told me that he benefited from this trip because doctors was able to talk to them and ask them and tell them about how they, you know, they could still be whatever it is that they want to be and how their career choices are open and how the medical field offers a lot of different things like that. And so I'm saying that as a black scientist, first of all, here it is,
which
a black
is what
scientist.
His, what he is. That's his
is what he is.
Physicist,
yes.
Is that correct?
Right. Yes. Okay. A black scientist in our midst. First of all, that influence. Now, you already know that the schools is failing us as far as math and science is concerned.
Absolutely.
I was looking at how much of an influence that he could be just being a black scientist as it is. The only time we ever hear about a black scientist is probably during February.
You're right, and that's normally a black scientist who unfortunately is no longer with us.
Thank you.
Exactly.
So his foundation is effective because they're not highlighted and they're not amongst the usual suspects who receive money to assist these other people in educating our kids. And so they're left accountable. It's just them and the kids. You're left
right.
accountable. You're standing there, you know, you either got to do for this kid or you don't, because you still got to see this kid's parent. You're like maybe the last line of defense. So that's kind of how the foundation is. They are results-based.
Let me ask you this question again for, you know, transparency and clarity. What is the actual side? Friday, she has a staff?
Yes,
or
yes, she does.
Okay, and just, what, a couple of staffers, additional people to the foundation?
And she also employs part-time, even some peers, some younger people, because, you know, you need to have input of younger people in order to reach younger people.
Younger people, correct.
Yeah, you know, for so long, these old fuddy-duddies always felt like they had the answer.
Look out now, look out.
The young people's problems.
You talked to an old-timer. Tell our listening audience, if you will, just a little bit about his corporation, because apparently this is a very successful corporation. If I'm not mistaken, his corporation is located north Minneapolis over on West River Road?
Yeah, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Okay.
And
that's the
success
story.
When I go to the company, and it's a tough story, when I go to the company, most of the people there, they're working. I don't interact or, you know, have too much conversation. From what I know about the company, it's just about him and what I read. But it seems that there is a formula for success, because you don't see a lot of people running around with their heads cut off or anything like that. It's relatively quiet there when I come there. The people that do come out, they speak to you, they, you know, hello, you know, and go ahead about their business. So I couldn't tell you a lot more than what you've told people at the top of the show, and in regards to the money and, you know, how successful they've been in regards to garnering contracts and that sort of thing. And also, too, I think that when you spoke, too, about, I think Mr. Allen spoke about the needs for what the product that he makes, how many different facets, satellites, you know, solar paneling.
Right. Military and commercial hardware. Right.
Yeah.
And Mr. Allen, go ahead.
I just want to interject real quick. This is how, Mr. Edwards, this and Mr. Smith, this guy is so successful at his formula that he has, that he says, you know what? He told me in a meeting with him, and I got a little bit more to say about that, but I'm going to tell you this piece up front. In a meeting with him, I asked him, I says, wow, you have a foundation, and you have the kids. There were some kids leaving to going to one of the satellite places, and he says, make sure that they have make sure they have food. Make sure they have, you know, some milk, some water to drink, and just make sure everyone's comfortable. They have a van, picks the kids up, drops them off. Okay. Then he told me a story. He goes, you know what? Hennepin County was nice enough to give them $9,000 one year. Okay, $9,000. Okay.
Right.
They end up opening four or five different satellite tutoring hubs across the Twin Cities, and kept them open for a year with $9,000.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about servicing about 150, 200 kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, not to glorify that $9,000, but I talked to Ms. Friday. You know, that $9,000 was probably spent in a month. they used a lot of their own money. I mean, they accepted the money, but they used a lot of their own money and a lot of their own manpower and continued it on.
And the point I want to make here real quick is that we sit here in the community and we watch places like the City Inc. We watch these different charter schools get millions of dollars for 1 year.
For 1 year, right.
Yeah, and the kids aren't any they're not better off at all. They haven't learned anything.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman is able to take a model that he works with, support that model, and let it run. Those are the type of people that should be funded. Period.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right then. Anything else, Mr. Allen? Now this is, I think this has been really an enlightened discussion. Certainly makes light bulbs go on because I'm telling you, this is a success story, and maybe we in communities, irrespective of race, creed, color, national origin, can use some of the formula that has been used by Dr. Childs, and maybe do a better job in the education of the sons and daughters of the Africans.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it is a new day.
Yes,
it is a new day, right. And I would say that Dr. Childs has provided us with an adequate template for the future.
Yes, he has. I concur. I have to concur. I think he really has. All right. Hey, Mr. Allen, anything from your end, sir?
No, I just like appreciate Wesley taking the time out in the last minute, giving us a call in, and greatly appreciate that. And we look forward to seeing you real soon.
Okay. Well, I'm just hoping,
Mr. Smith.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, you know, Mr. Allen, like I said, I think it's important to set aside that 10, 11 minutes that we have provided for Mr. Smith and, by extension, Dr. Childs' efforts, because, you know, we are so desperate at this point, not only in the Twin Cities, but across Black America, to find these success stories. And obviously, Governor Mark Dayton, isn't that interesting, recognized it and, you know, was committed enough. I guess that's the word I will use as it pertains to the governor. He was committed enough to take out some political capital, because that's really what this is about. When you make a recommendation to the chief executive officer of the nation, and you recommend and you speak, if you will, or endorse someone, that's political capital that can either increase itself or significantly decrease if it falls flat on its face. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And for the governor to extend that capital, if you will, you know, maybe speaks volumes for the governor maybe having a better understanding than some of us think that we may have about what's going on. And I want to repeat that. That was political capital that the governor committed himself to. And it's just a success story. And, you know, certainly maybe it can be emulated other places starting right here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's something that needs to happen pretty quick. Well, Mr. Edwards, you know, earlier this week, on actually Thursday, I was at the North Common. Because at North Commons Park, they had the North Minneapolis, North High School, I should say, redesign meeting.
Oh, yes. The firm, because they selected out of New York City. Yes. I know that went well. Large crowd?
Oh, let me tell you. I have a video up online. It's part four of my seven-part series about the Minneapolis Public Schools, but the place was empty. Okay, probably left.
Wait, I'm sorry. The place was empty?
Probably about less than 30 people, maybe less than that. And in my story, I gave a little bit higher estimate because I left midway through it. But, you know, if the video clearly shows the empty seats. And what they've done is, I always tell people that the same consciousness that created a problem in the Minneapolis Public Schools certainly cannot solve the problems, okay?
Uh-huh.
And so what they've done is, those people that were to get 125 freshmen for the next upcoming school year for North High are some of the same people that they nominated to this committee to help the redesign team, actually out of Chicago, ISA it is.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at it. As a matter of fact, I'm over here in the studio. I just, you know, I didn't think I brought this with me, but I did. And I have the piece of paper here that they're talking about. The purpose of tonight's meeting is to fill remaining four slots and two alternates for the North High Redesign Advisory Committee. But what had happened here, Mr. Edwards, is this got tainted by the district headquarters. They felt they needed full control over this advisory committee. So they sat a couple district folks on there and were very touchy. they use the people that have been drinking the school district's Kool-Aid all along.
And so Jonestown all over again, right.
Yeah, and it's going to be a cluster mess because, you know, you're looking at what these people are trying to do. And it's very interesting. When you talk about redesigning a curriculum of education or redesigning in general, you would hope there would be some community buy-in, some buy-in, some business people buy-in. And if you looked in the room when I was there, you didn't have that nucleus, although they do have Mr. Marcus Owens, who is he's out in the forefront. He understands both sides of the table. Okay. And
okay.
I'm glad that brother is right there and he's been there all the time. And he's trying to do what he can do. And I can say what he can't say. So
he's president of the Alumni Association.
Yeah, there's the Friends of North High School. He is the
right. Okay.
Yes. And then you have Kyle Severson or Kale, whatever you'd like to call him, who is the president of the alumni, North High Alumni Association.
Oh, okay. Right.
And you know, he's one of the ones that took the trip down to Chicago to check out the Noble Charter Schools. And
I forgot to tell people that, right.
Got to tell folks. And then
I signed off on it.
And then it's very interesting, Mr. Edwards. Before the show, I got a chance to go to the Noble Charter School website, which says North is closing and how great of a model that the Noble School model would be for North.
Okay.
And so, you know, with that said, you know, I guess it's probably good we don't have Noble if they're that behind in their website information.
Noble has the latest information from the PR office of the district is that school will not be ready to go until 2013 at best, right?
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
Right.
And Mr. Edwards, you mentioned an interesting thing about the communications department, which kind of shocked me. You know, I've been getting emails from the communications department of the Minneapolis Public Schools for a while, press releases they call them. And you know, it's 2011 and the internet is there. And, you know, like Mr. Edwards, when you do a story, we can Google the title and get it instantly.
Right.
I went through about 200 press releases from the Minneapolis School District, and only 3 of them showed up on a search engine. Which means they're just going through the motions, going in a void. And I discussed this with a producer from Channel 4 on Wednesday, excuse me. And they were amazed where I could sit down and actually show them that, first of all, this stuff doesn't show up. And where are they sending it to? Because, you know, Mr. Edwards, me and you were at a meeting not too long ago for the District Oversight Committee. And they said, oh, we emailed out notices to let people know. But the only people that showed up was me, you, Mr. Edwards, and a guy, gentleman by the name of Troy Parker. So where are they sending these emails to?
Well, this would tie in, Mr. Allen, with the report. There was a report a week ago. Corey Mitchell in the Star Tribune, man, it's interesting that they gave it the kind of spotlight that they did, though they haven't done any follow-up. And it seemed to be a warning signal to Superintendent Bernadette Johnson that she needed to right the ship, if you will, to get things in order. Very, very critical study, evaluation, if you will, of very, very poor performance. In fact, the individual that was retained to do it for $13,000, which is kind of an interesting amount for a study of that so-called magnitude. But he used such words as incompetent and dysfunctional for the performance of the district. Now, this comes at a time when Superintendent Bernadette Johnson has been purging some of the administrative offices and academic offices of the district's headquarters. In fact, I think she's fired the entire staff of the program that deals with tutoring and such things as that.
Yes,
and I know that she has relieved the entire staff at Roosevelt High School in South Minneapolis. I mean, she got rid of, you know, she put the whole school into a non-functional status, terminate. Well, they don't terminate them. What they do is that you have to go find somewhere else to go teach in the district, which is kind of a peculiar policy. But this comes at a very peculiar and difficult time for the superintendent because a lot of that study and report certainly raised some questions about her administrative competency and her ability to manage. In fact, it makes a recommendation that an assistant superintendent, now I don't know that the taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis can afford another $115,000, $120,000 salary with bonuses in the form of an assistant superintendent. But what the report went on to say was that it's quite clear that Superintendent Johnson leaves a lot to be desired. But maybe she's getting it together because, by the way, for our audience and for her many friends, you know, she'll be receiving her doctor's on May 12th from the University of Minnesota. So she will finally be able to put on a resume that she has received her doctoral in, I assume, education. I'm certainly happy for her because the salary she receives is a salary that basically is commensurate with someone that does have a doctor's degree. Oops.
Yes, yeah, yes. And this is hot off the press here. Someone just sent me a message. Since that report, soon to be Dr. Bernadette Johnson is searching for another
assistant. Well, she's not a doctor now. Not yet. She doesn't get it until 12th of May.
Senator Joseph Labor, Superintendent Johnson, is looking for a person or assistant superintendent upon those recommendations. I guess she's interviewing, it says here.
That would make sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
she probably has a friend already in mind.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the problem right there. You have staff in that district headquarters that just aren't functioning as is. Why would you bring someone else in to even do anything in there until you iron out? Well, I don't think she can. First of all, fix what's going on. You have Dan Lowenson, who's the fixer. You can ask. They have a lot of foot dragging going on when you ask them for information. I talked to Mr. Lowenstein on Friday. And
okay.
I asked him, I says, you know what, Mr. Lowenstein, I sent you some information more than 20 days ago about the district headquarters.
Didn't you send him a request way back in October that he failed to comply with?
That was the first one I sent in October. I says, can I get that information? Then I took a handwritten request up to the general counsel's office.
Uh-huh.
A woman by the name of Amy Moore decided to call me back and not talk about it. I said, that's great. So I called Mr. Lowenstein on Friday, and I said, hey, you know, I need this information. I said, Corey Mitchell from the Star and Tribune can walk in and ask for emails that were sent between me and the school board members. And you get them automatically. And I'm asking you for stuff. You haven't given me stuff since October under the Freedom of Information Act and the Minnesota Data Privacy Act. I said,
uh-huh.
What's going on? He goes, well, I'll send you an update Friday. You know what? No update.
Yeah, Dan is notorious and legendary here in this community and school district of doing that. He is clearly the gatekeeper and certainly has aided and abetted the miseducation of the Negro in the Minneapolis public school system. There's just no doubt about it. You know, I'm not surprised with respect to how he has handled the information. He has been one of the principal people that have basically sabotaged the community benefits agreement that was submitted by a small group of us way back in December. And I noticed that school board members are concurring with the fact that the community benefits agreement should not be looked at in an honest and earnest manner. By the way, on that particular note, if I could, don't want to digress, but I understand that you, Mr. Allen, went out and did a nice piece of investigative reporting based on a question that was asked a couple months ago by one of your colleagues about when will the district begin to buy American. And I understand that you've done a piece in which a steel worker on the site of the New Crystal Palace, which, by the way, will be dedicated on Monday. We need to make sure that our community and constituents know that. But I understand that we are buying Chinese steel for our beautiful new building. Is that correct?
That is correct. I got an email, Mr. Edwards, again from the communications department of the Minneapolis Public Schools, that just didn't make a whole lot of sense. they said on, it's actually Tuesday, April 19th at 11 a.m., they're going to have folks, political leaders, Bobby Joe Champion, Linda Higgins.
Yes, for 30.
Excuse me. Don Samuels and R.T. Ryback, Mayor Ryback, to sign a steel beam.
To do what? To sign one of the steel beams made in China.
Yeah.
And so that makes a lot of political and economic sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes a whole lot of sense. And then I went over there, and I ended up talking to one of the workers on the site and says, yeah, this stuff is from China by way of, well, from Canada by way of China.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, from China by way of Canada. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, from China by way of Canada.
Yeah.
Yes, because when we posed that question a number of months ago, Mortensen indicated that they didn't know where their steel came from, which was rather interesting, particularly when you talk in terms of a number of federal laws with respect to such things as that. Though I already knew when I posed the question that the steel was bought from China and brought here via Canada. But that was a nice piece of work, and that is really amazing. You now have the information which shows our beloved mayor and local politicians and et cetera signing some Chinese steel.
Yeah. And you know what?
While Americans go unemployed. That makes a lot of sense. What insight? What a sense of value.
And the thing is, Mr. Edwards, you know, I put in the title of the story, was there's no need for celebration. You haven't met participation.
Yeah. Okay?
Jill Davis and Alberto Mazarat still refuse and deny requests for information about the district headquarters, along with Dan Lowenstein. They won't say a word about what's going on. They won't talk about the involvement of Catalyst Community Partners. They won't talk about, the hiring and the faulty numbers that they gave us in that meeting from Legacy Thor.
And you mean, and the slave labor that we first reported on over a month ago.
Yeah, slave
labor. Again, we want to repeat for our domestic and international audience, we had a situation here where African-American, about 20, 25 African-American men were forced. They were involved in a reentry program, and of course the Department of Corrections must take responsibility for this, but about 25 African-American men were forced to work on the facility without legal compensation in direct violation of the Davis-Bacon Act. No one will touch it, and we can get no one to challenge us on the documentation we presented. And the lies that were told by Mortensen and Lynn Littlejohn her office. But yes, we had a situation where about 25 African American men were forced to work on the site without compensation, and what happened when they were given scraps of the refuge from the site during the demolition period and were told to go sell it at a salvage shop. Where my understanding is the average salary for almost 3 months of work was probably about $35.
Yes. Yeah, it wasn't even worth it. And, I mean, they will not give us the information. And I would like to give our listeners in the chat room and also online listening to us right now our toll-free telephone number, which is 877-572-4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288.
So, one other piece on that, Mr. Allen. Appreciate that. We may also be able to get our audience involved because I noticed Corey Mitchell in the Star Tribune didn't write about this past Tuesday. One of the things that the district does well is that it does eliminate black opportunity in the field of education, though I have to say in this situation, this particular entity brought it on itself. But fellowship, missionary church in South Minneapolis under the Reverend Billy Russell, lost their school.
Mm-hmm.
Board on a 4-2-1 vote shut the school down.
Wow.
And there was no press release. Mr. Mitchell in the Star Tribune apparently didn't see fit to write about it. The Black Ministerial Alliance is ranting and raving, but it's a irreversible situation because apparently they walked in and found the school being ran and teachers without certificates or license. Isn't that terrible?
Wow. And I think that just happened to the Minneapolis Public Schools not too long ago at the Broadway School. No lights.
Yes, yes. So, you know, the fellowship should have had a better understanding of you can't operate like that. But then on the other hand, they were knocked out of the box, and it was a 4-2-1 vote. It was interesting. And then one board member, Dick Mamum, didn't even show up.
Yeah, it said, Mr. Edwards, that he had a kidney stone.
Yeah, kidney stone, and he wasn't able to pass it in time.
Yes, so.
Okay, but he sure passed the buck, though, didn't he?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
What else we have, Mr. Howe? We don't want to just pick on our beloved Minneapolis Public Schools. And, again, we want to congratulate Superintendent Bernadere Johnson, who will become Dr. Bernadere Johnson on the 12th of May of this year, I assume.
All right, yeah, we'll wait and we'll see. And, you know, I'd have to hit the Mission Impossible music.
Very timely, very timely. Well, what else do we have?
I have never stepped foot in Target Field or the Twins ballpark or the Polad Plantation, whatever you'd like to call it. But I have a picture on IBNN News with Don Samuels singing the second role in the multi-million dollar payroll.
Wait, you mean Jamaican Don?
The Jamaican Don, yes.
Double meaning on the name Don. You're kidding. He was at the game?
He was at the game sitting in the seats around the constituents of the color that he wants them to look. So he could reach out and actually touch the Oakland A player if he wanted to. That's how
close. All right, then.
Yes.
Now, this is the same Jamaican Don that was silent as Target Field was being built and no African Americans were being employed or receiving any contracts. And the then Civil Rights Director, Michael Jordan, was certifying to the City Council bogus information, just like Ms. Littlejohn was forwarding bogus information to the school district on the construction of the Crystal Palace along the 1200 block of West Broadway. That's the same Jamaican Don that you're talking about?
It's the same one. It's the same one.
My man. Play it again one more time.
Yeah, we got
Mr. Allen, this is for Jamaican Don.
Here you go. Dr. Don. Okay.
Yes, sir. Wow, what a guy. And he's going to be signing a piece of Chinese steel this coming Monday, right?
Yeah, but you know,
I cannot look at this guy without laughing.
So, I'm sitting there wondering, like, what is he doing? What is he doing? You know, and it's very interesting. You know, it's go sign the Chinese steel, and you're going to sit up there and, you know, Ms. Eric, I'm thinking about getting out my sign that says liars. And when each one of them get up, hold it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Make them a little nervous. Yes.
And give us the time again so that folks across the metropolitan Twin City area will know. Maybe they can come and be involved. And maybe specifically organized labor who says they're concerned about the policy of Buy American can come. And though they technically will be on the site because the workers there are all union. But maybe they can all come. What time again will that be on Monday?
It's actually Tuesday at 10 a.m., April 19th,
okay.
Tuesday at 10 a.m. At the construction site. It's called a construction celebration for Minneapolis Public Schools' new educational service center.
Wow. Wow. You're talking about dancing on the graves of civil rights.
Exactly.
That's what that illustrates on Tuesday. Maybe we can get one of our cartoonists to draw a cartoon of the city officials dancing on the grave of civil rights in Minneapolis as they signed that steel. That's steel from communist China. Of course, you got to be careful about how we refer to our Chinese brethren because they own a lot of American paper, if you know what I mean. I'm talking about financial paper.
Yeah.
And I don't know, because the district won't own that building for 20 years. you know, the Mortensen Group may very well sell some of that paper to Chinese investors, and maybe the Chinese government will own our Crystal Palace for 15 of those 20 years.
Yeah, that's always a possibility. Mr. Edwards, we didn't get a chance last week to bring this up, but I am looking actually for the listing. You know, the Urban League. Oh, here we go, right in the studio in front of me in my pile of papers.
The Urban League of Minneapolis, Roland Martin.
Yes, the gateway to opportunity. And I just had someone leave me a message that said the gateway to opportunity.
Yeah.
They're having a gala with keynote speaker Roland Martin on May.
Now, that's the same Roland Martin that has still not apologized to Ms. Sherrard, the courageous African-American woman who lost her job under bogus pretenses at the Department of Agriculture. And Roland Martin, without doing any research whatsoever, viciously attacked her along with the NAACP and others. At least the NAACP apologized.
Yes,
Roland, I don't think, ever apologized for absolutely incorrect information as it pertains to that whole situation, tragedy, if you will. He will be the keynote. I understand it's going to be, what, $20, $25 per person?
It's actually $100 per person.
Oh, is that right? Well, man, for $100 a person, we could have got R. Kelly.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We got that kind of money going on. Good R. Kelly.
Because it's going to be at Orchestra Hall, and then you're going to go across the bridges, if you will, to the Hilton and have a little food, a little buffet, right?
Yes, that's exactly what they're doing. And they're
okay.
And I just put the link. Those of you that want to hear to look at the background of Roland Martin, I just put the link up from News One that talks about how he really talked bad about this Shirley Sherrard, and he never apologized. And it actually has the video of him looking real crazy. So he must have been the cheapest guy on the circuit or something. But again, this just shows. Again, it's sponsored by Comcast, Best Buy, and it shows a really just distasteful disrespect for someone, for the community as well as Ms. Sherrard, to even have him coming here and speaking. And for those of you, we have a lot of people, Mr. Edwards, in the chat room. I'm really grateful for people tuning in, but I know that a while back ago, we interviewed Star Parker, who was running for Congress out in California in Compton, if I'm not mistaken. And she basically broke down what the National Urban League was. And, Mr. Edwards, is it okay if I just let that roll real quick?
I thought you had it. I was looking across studio. I thought you had it ready. Hey, let's run it.
This is the Urban League.
There were, when we were talking about the African-American, the black community and black leaders, one of those organizations that frankly we struggle with here in my area and areas around the country is the Urban League. They seem to have meshed with a lot of course, the black pastors we're talking about and the so-called black leaders in the community to have that liberal coalition that makes it, you're right, political, social suicide to go up against them. Recently, you had some comments about the Urban League, and I wanted to see kind of how those were playing out and what you were hearing about them.
Well, what we know is that there is an agenda of a secular statist mentality. You know, I describe it basically as the cultural war being two sides vying for space. You have a biblical worldview that was set in our rule of law as a nation. But you, on the other side, you have a secular worldview that doesn't like the fact that God said, here are the boundaries, here are the rules, and that our founders thought that they were important enough to thread them through our Declaration and into our Constitution so that the role of government was limited to protecting our interests, to protecting us from our neighbor's sin. The rest of it is up to us. To live free, you have to be responsible. But there's a war against that. And so you have those that have this agenda to their core, the secular statist agenda. But then think about the old slave plantation. There are 4 million slaves in the country, and they lived in this plantation. And this, the owner, let's put him where that secular state affairs, that you had overseers where their exclusive job was to keep those slaves in place. And that's where I would categorize the Urban League and many of the other civil rights organizations, as well as the People for the American Way and the ACLU and the all of the media. They're like the old plantation overseer. So that if anybody decides they're going to talk about freedom, or anybody decides that they really want difference and change, that person is brought before the rest, kind of like what they used to do when somebody would run away up the underground. They catch them, they bring them back, they bring all the other slaves out to watch them strip the skin off of that slave's back and bruise them forever so nobody else would ever try to run away. That's where I put the Urban League. They have shaken down corporations in this country, multiple millions of dollars, and their exclusive job now is to keep poor people poor. They keep them on the plantation, and they keep them in a victim mentality.
That was Star Parker.
And for the purposes of transparency, commercial, otherwise, she was being interviewed by a colleague of ours, Mr. Allen, in St. Petersburg, Florida. Could you please identify him?
Mr. Willie Lawson. He was nice enough to do the interview because he had her calling in and was grateful, gracious enough to share that piece with us.
Yes, okay. All right. Now, back to the league. It's $100 per patron. Is that correct?
Yes, $100 per person. Yes, sir.
Okay. And then you will hear Mr. Martin at Orchestra Hall, the beautiful Orchestra Hall in downtown Minneapolis. And then they will journey across the pedestrian bridge, if you will, here that we have here in Minnesota in our downtown areas, Minneapolis-St. Paul. And we'll go to the Hilton Hotel for, is it a full meal or is it a buffet or a brunch or what?
No, you know what? They're very vague on what they're doing, and I haven't gotten the total details. But what I do know is that they'll be giving Trailblazer Awards away to Bobby Joe Champion and State Representative Jeff Hayden this year. And if
you say Trailblazer, you mean they've gotten awards from the Portland Trailblazers or the National Basketball Association?
Oh, they need to, because I think both of them can play a little hoop. But no, they're getting
the. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know. It must have been a senior moment or something. I'm sorry. Yeah. And they're giving them the Trailblazer Award for trailblazing what?
You know what? I haven't really figured that out yet. And I think Mr. Edwards, like Star Parker was saying here, we know Scott Gray, the president of the Minneapolis Urban League. You know him, I know him, okay? I know him well. And
knew him when he was in Milwaukee.
When he was here the first time around.
Right.
Yes. And so this is more of a political move to keep those three. I know he always says he's getting two Trailblazer Awards, but I'll correct that later on. These three political black folks in North Minneapolis kind of keep them on the top of the cream, you know? So last year, the Trailblazer Award went to Congressman Ellison, but he never showed up.
Okay, all right.
So,
well, you think he was in Saudi Arabia or something like that?
Saudi Arabia, Washington, D.C., at the coffee shop, hanging out, you know?
Right, okay.
And so this time, what has happened with the Urban League, and we discussed this before, awards, historic awards that have been coming out of the Urban League, like the Cecil E. Newman Award, Humanitarian Award.
The Nellystone Johnson Community Service Award, things like that. They don't do that anymore, do they?
No, they don't. They don't. And you almost made me curse. No, they don't do that.
Okay. Well, those were past legends and legacies of our community. They're no longer relevant. Particularly when you talk about, what is it, Pathway to Success or Pathway to...
It's all the Gateway to...
I'm sorry, Gateway, yeah. Yeah, okay. All right, is this like the Barbarians at the Gates? I shouldn't do that. We need to be serious here on point. So, all right then. Well, so it's $100 per person, and the two big corporate sponsors are Comcast and Best Buy.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, what more can we hope for? You know, if you can't get a TV program, then we'll send you somewhere to buy a better TV.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, I mean, this, and I was at the, you know, getting back real quick, I just want to back up real quick. You know, Dr. Childs wanted some media done, and so it was convenient to do his media junket over at the Minneapolis Urban League. And Mr. Edwards, I was probably there about 2 hours. And people, you feel really bad because people walk in that obviously need something. That need
like
some
services. Yes, okay.
You know, that need some kind of services that, and the way that these people at the front desk talk to them, oh, we ain't got that. We ain't, well, you got to come back another time, or you need to call Miss So-and-so. I'm like,
that sounds like the Civil Rights Department of Minneapolis, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so you're wondering, like, what the heck is going on in here? And then you walk down and you see the rooms filled with boxes that used to be offices. And it's just a feeling of, like, it's like ghost hunters. Like, you know,
well, isn't 70% of their facility there on Plymouth Avenue, that, you know, basically 10-year-old building, isn't basically 70% of their office space, with the exception of Congressman Keith Ellison, 70% of the space is empty, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty quiet.
Yeah,
it is
quiet. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they did lay off, like you said, last couple of shows, they did lay off a couple more staff members because they did not fill out an application for Hennepin County for general assistance.
Right, as was exclusively reported on this radio program.
Yes.
and other mediums that we are involved with. But I imagine, Don, I imagine that there's some rationale, some logic, some understanding. Let me do this as we move to the close to the top of the hour, about 34 minutes left. We happen to mention civil rights. We want to talk just a tad about what's happening in the legislative sessions here in the state of Minnesota, both houses now controlled by Republicans. The Human Rights Department, by the way, took a tremendous hit, or is the proposed tremendous hit. The word we're using here now are savage cuts, if you will. And I understand that the Council on Black Minnesotans are also looking at some severe cuts.
Yes, they are. I was just talking with them, and it's a directional thing with that group. I don't know what's going on, Mr. Edwards, but, you know, they have a little bit of money to throw around. But, again, they're stuck in the era that, you know, I don't want to have to lower my IQ to go try to figure it out. So,
okay. All right. Well, in the case of the State Human Rights Department, the hits are fairly massive and raises serious questions on how we'll be able to even look at the issue of enforcement. And, of course, in the case of Minneapolis and St. Paul, there's no enforcement that goes on anyways. And in fact, both of those departments are under serious consideration for cuts as the legislature cuts back on aids to the cities, as we reported on last week's program, if you will. Want to touch on something else that folks don't like to talk about, and that is really working hard here in Minnesota to get a stadium for our beloved Vikings.
Yes.
You think that'll happen, Mr. Allen?
Well, Mr. Edwards, I actually have it right here on, and let me just get the right date, because I'm in the studio here shuffling papers, but let me go down here on, okay, let me go up, I'm almost there. There was a bill introduced, and I have it here, Minnesota Vikings Stadium bill online. And it was in the Minnesota Senate, was introduced, and I think they might get some of what they want. If not, the way it's looking, I see the bill here, it's online. I'm actually going to post it on the chat, in the chat room, for those of you that want to click on it and go check it out. But if it does not make it past this little hurdle here that they're having,
won't get a hearing.
Yeah, won't get a hearing, and then the Vikings will probably end up as the Los Angeles Vikings down there with Magic Johnson and his group.
Yes, you're absolutely correct, and as we have been reporting on some of our programs, television and blog and et cetera, that, I mean, there have been discussions going on for over a year between the Vikings a couple of different groups in Los Angeles, because there's two Pacific sites in L.A., one in downtown L.A. and the other one out in what is called the Imperial Valley. People try to dismiss it as something that won't happen, but there are very serious discussions, and the NFL per se would in fact like to put at least one, if not two, teams back in the L.A. area because of the attractiveness of the market. On that particular point, too, you know, we are in a celebrity role right now here in the Twin Cities because the NFL lockout is being looked at by our federal court here. It's a part of the agreement made way back in 1985, 86, 87, is that the federal court here in the state of Minnesota, for the Federal District of Minnesota, presides over the collective bargaining agreement and et cetera. So that means that our federal judges are taking a look at that, and the NFL and the players, though the Players Association has decertified itself, they have been ordered back into, you know, forced mediation. I just don't think it's going to happen, Don. You know what I'm saying? I just don't think that we're going to have a 2011 season, you know, I say. And I think that a lot of the players realize that they're kind of getting sick and tired of being on the plantation kind of thing. Now, I know that that leaves you open to an attack about how can you talk about plantation from players that are making $3, $4, $5, $6, $7, $8, $9 million a year, and et cetera. But that's only a small proportion, if you will. But anyways, a lot of discussions up here with respect to what's going on behind closed doors at the federal courthouses, both in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And so we'll kind of be in the forefront here on point, Don, with respect to that in the coming weeks. One other piece I want to get in very quickly. We are looking and have been looking very closely at a most interesting lawsuit here in our beloved city, in which two white police officers have sued. Now, this is peculiar, Don. They sued the city of Minneapolis, its police department, an assistant chief, Janae Hartel, and a deputy chief by the name of Gerlicher, but they didn't sue the chief, Tim Dolan, our good friend Tim Dolan.
Wow.
And I'm trying to figure out, if you're suing everybody, why don't you sue the head of the department unless he's in on it? Oops.
Yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't have said that. You know what I'm saying? That our chief plays that kind of games here. But, man, I got to tell you, I've been trying to encourage on a couple of other mediums that we are involved with, websites and et cetera. You know, if I were the black police officers here in Minneapolis, I'd go get the filing. Because I'm telling you, these white cops talked about these brothers like they got tails, man.
And speaking of lawsuits, the city of Minneapolis is to pay $3.2 million over killed water treatment plan. That's in the Star Review, a story by Steve Brandt on April 15th was in the paper yesterday. That's when they put it online at 7:29 p.m. And so we have the city just darn near, you know, paying out money everywhere, it looks like, here to folks. And
that particular story indicates that there was supposed to be a $96 million water treatment upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
And then the city apparently not being in contact with Washington and understanding what was needed decided, what was it, 2008 canceled the project?
Yes.
But this specific company.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
This specific company said, no, no, not on our watch. You're going to pay us for the outlay that we'd already made. And they had made some arrangements and contractual arrangements with a Japanese firm, blah, 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 blah. And the city had to give them, what was it, $3.2 million, right, Don?
Yes, yeah, $3.2 million.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess we got that kind of money here.
Yeah, yeah. And
yeah, I mean, we don't have housing and good services. Man, I'm telling you, for those of you that plan to come to the Twin Cities, make sure you rent a car and get the right kind of insurance, because we got major potholes here.
Oh, yeah. Everywhere. Everywhere. You can't drive half a block without hitting something. Yeah, it's crazy. And we're going to have some more breaking news. Uh-oh. Well, Mr. Edwards, this is going to be a on-point news exclusive. Sources from North Minneapolis have come to On Point to announce, and we have verified this, that the Stairstep Foundation, located in North Minneapolis, right off James Avenue and 14th in North Minneapolis, right off
Alfred Babington Johnson, one of the big power brokers here in our city. Yes.
Staff has not been paid in 4 months.
I'm sorry. Repeat that because the Stairstep Foundation has been the recipient of $3 or $4 million here just in the last calendar year. What do you mean they're not paying their staff?
They have not paid staff. Sources that work directly inside of the building are telling our sources, which are very reliable, that they have not been paid in 4 months, that bills are being taken over by friends and relatives because Alfred Babington Johnson...
I cannot look at this guy without laughing.
...has not been forward. And up front with these guys. Now, we know that Stairstep Foundation has received a kind of an outreach services grant of in excess of $140,000 this year from Hennepin County. But if they are not paying those folks, I mean, how can they bill these people? What's going on? We're going to have to see some records from Hennepin County.
Well, but to not pay your staff, now, I can't believe that Babington Johnson and his wife would do this to any white employee. These must be employees of color.
Yep.
African-American citizens. And, how are these people expected to live and meet their obligations?
Yeah, well, the person who's telling me what's going on is just shocked at just the things that are happening within the organization. I mean, if you go to their website, you look like this guy's a big baller, shot caller, and, you know, the Tires Plus, the Dairy Queen, the Cieza, all that stuff looks like it's current. So you would fool some.
Oh, none of that. None of that's been current since Marcia Samuel Staton was actually his backer many years ago. I mean, we're not supposed to talk about that here in the Twin Cities, but it was Marcia Samuel Staton who really was the backer, was the person that put together the so-called Alfred Babington Johnson Empire stair step. And those organizations you named, now you must have been incorrect. I mean, I know that you're good at reading the screen and the such, but you must have been incorrect, Mr. Allen, when you said that information looked current. It couldn't have been. Those businesses all went under. They went belly up a number of years ago.
Well, you know, Mr. Edwards, when that happens, a lot of people are really honest online. It's like a resume. They'll say, okay, we opened it in 2000X and we closed down, you know, out of business 2000, or, you know, you give a start and an end date.
Okay.
Okay, if you look at the site, you know, you want to rush out of here, get some tires for your car, go get a hamburger at Burger King, and then stop by Dairy Queen and have your ice cream cone.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. But it doesn't say that most of those businesses went out of business 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah, well, no, it doesn't say that.
Oh, wow.
It does not say that at all. So how much
is Mr. Babington Johnson, how much is he paying himself as the executive director of the Stairstep?
Do you know, got his 990
in front of you there?
I can, that would be very quick to get up here. If I just can go to, if you give me a couple seconds here while we discuss stuff, and I can just... I can go to the other computer here, and I could just look up the Stairstep Foundation, which I'm doing right now. And,
because the individual that Mr. Allen and I are talking about is a person that has been promoted. In fact, at one point he was a minister, and then he was kind of within the Muslim religion, and he backed out of that pretty quick. But I can remember him putting on a Come to Jesus meeting at the State Theater many years ago, raised thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. But his empire, as it was referred to, was looked upon as one of the great success stories. In fact, I can well remember in his first term, Mayor R.T. Ryback, blessing Mr. Babington Johnson and the success that he represented. With respect to all these businesses that you've just identified that have been out of business for at least 6 years.
He pays himself $90,000 a year, And I'm looking at his, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Mr.
No, we need this information.
I'm looking at his 2009 990s, and this is available for free from GuideStar.com or GuideStar.org. It takes you both to the same place.
Right.
And I'm looking at the statement of revenue here for 2009. That's the current one they have on file. It looks like expenses, total expenses were $936,000 in 2009.
How much?
Total expenses were $900,336.
Well, they must have a lot of programs. They must have done a lot of funding of community types of programs, right?
Yeah, unrelated business revenue was $107,000. I just want to see what their bottom line was here, because that's the telltale.
Now, he's making at least $90,000 a year, and he wasn't able to pay his staff at Stair Step Foundation. He's not paid his staff for 4 months.
Yep, in 2000.
Did he have anything? Did he have anything put away?
I don't know. Total revenue, gains, and other support for audited financial statements. It looks like $1,077,000 here going into 2010, because like I said, this is the 2009. I'm looking for one more number on here. Total support. Mr. Edwards, you are going to kick and kick out of this. Okay.
Okay.
Section B, Form 990, Stair Step Foundation, 2009. Total support, calendar years, 2005, $500,000. 2007, we're going to skip 2006 because that's wrong. 2007, $754,000. And then from 2007 to 2008, we jump up to $2,175,000. Okay?
All right, so they've been doing some fascinating things for the African-American community, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And then in 2009, $1,077,000. So we're looking at a total for 5 years of $5 million. How are you?
Wow, well, it looks like our community should have certainly benefited from that kind of windfall. What are some of the, you know, excellent things that they are doing?
I have no idea. I have no idea. And somebody just left me a comment. What about his take-home pay? I understand. We all understand if you pay taxes, you have to pay taxes. And so if you're making $90,000 a year, you're probably taking home somewhere in the neighborhood of $75,000, $80,000, depending on your dependents. But I'm not going to get detailed on it. But, yeah, I'm looking at these 990s, and, you know, if you're doing $5 million – I mean, what is the programs, Mr. Edwards? That would be the question.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I well remember the many excellent promos and PR pieces that were put out back in the mid-2000s, 2003, 4, 5, right up to when things got real good, about the wonderful things that they were doing. In fact, I remember when Dr. Babington Johnson and his lovely wife brought Scott Gray here to become the executive director of the Minneapolis Urban League from Madison, Wisconsin. And I remember they were promoting. In fact, I remember Babington Johnson was a speaker at the annual dinner of the Madison Urban League back in 2008 or whatever. And he talked about the wonderful things that his empire was doing here in the Twin Cities. But my sources, operatives in the Madison area, were telling me, and I said, well, that's interesting because none of those businesses exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I guess that's the way things are expected to work around here.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's a nice windfall.
Yeah, and I'm also looking at the Minneapolis Urban League's 2009 990s that were filed 6/25/10 in 2010. And they walked in the beginning of the year with $6,995,000. At the end of the year, Mr. Edwards, $6,544,000. So they went into 2011 pretty well set. And it's kind of strange that they're letting people go like that over there.
Well, now, I'm shocked to hear that, Mr. Allen, and as we're sitting here in studio and having technical staff confirm and collate some of this, because this organization has cut its staff by 70%. I'm confused. Maybe you're looking at the I hate to insult you like this, my friend, but you must be looking at your numbers wrong. This organization has eliminated almost 70% or better of its staff, maybe even 75%. They've lost major programs and et cetera. And you say that they're sitting on almost $6.5 million in assets, expenditures, and I'm confused. I'm not understanding what you're saying.
This is what I'm saying. On the 2009 Form 990, for it says net assets, fund balances, okay?
Uh-huh.
Liabilities at the beginning of the year was $244,000, which left them at the end of the year with $6,544,000.
I thought I heard you saying that, but I thought maybe we were misspeaking, because I'm just trying to figure out how that could be. And at that particular point in time that you're talking about, they were already starting to cut staff. They lost their schools, if you will. They lost any number of programs. And, of course, since then, they lost a large contract with the county. And I'm not understanding how those numbers could come into play.
Yeah,
and by the way, what is Scott Gray paying himself?
Scott Gray is paying himself a compensation of $95,000. It's $94,812. With a compensation from organization and related organizations of $9,779, so he's a little bit over $100,000.
So he's about at $103,000.
Yes.
In salaries. Okay.
The chief financial officer is paying himself $72,000 a year, with $13,000 extra in compensation from organization and related organizations.
Okay, that's 85.
Yeah.
Okay. And what about the administrative program director or whatever her name is?
Well, they don't have that listed here. They have David Oguamanon. He's an interim CEO. They're paying him $62,000 plus another.
At that time. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Plus another $6,000.
Okay. Okay. Who's the finance officer?
Let me go up there and see who that is. The finance officer is listed as. It's actually signed by Scott Gray, and I cannot read this lady's hand, Anna M. something, from CBiz HMHM LLC, located downtown on South 9th Street, Suite 1000. You have to call her.
Wow. That's interesting. Okay. Well, like I said, we've been saying here on Point for a year that an enormous amount of money has been going into the African-American community via the executive route, if you will. And, in fact, you quoted the number since May of last year at better than $90 million into our community. We have the largest number of unemployed. We have the largest number of having been unemployed as it pertains to an extensive period of time. We have the largest number of individuals in the African-American community who cannot find employment. We have the largest number of African-Americans who are required to work for as much as 40% less than their white counterparts. So I guess we can say some do well and others aren't, right?
Yes, and I like to put the Urban League thing into perspective, Mr. Edwards. From 2005 to 2009, which is this the filing that I have here for 2009, the Urban League raked in $26,594,000.
Wow.
Yes. And the total, I got another total here. Net income from unrelated business activities, whether or not business is regularly carried on. With that added, their five-year total is $27,000,000. $389,000 for that 5 years.
So. Yeah, when Clarence Hightower, the previous director before Mr. Gray arrived here from Madison, Wisconsin, when he bailed out to become the executive director at the CAP agency in Ramsey/Washington County, the organization was already on the skids, and that is certainly confirmed by the 990s and also by the United Way of the Greater Metropolitan. Oh, that's right. You know, that was something we didn't get a chance to report, and we should apologize to our listening audience domestically and internationally. You know, our good friend, Mr. Lassiter from the National, remember, was here a couple months ago because the Urban League is going to become the Metropolitan Urban League. You remember that?
Yeah.
They're going to become the Metropolitan Urban League, and that's being worked on, but there's hostility and resistance in St. Paul, where our sister, the sister Urban League of St. Paul, went out of business and became defunct 2 years ago. And we forgot to really, you know, mention that and share that with our listening base. Maybe things will get itself back together when it becomes the Urban League of Metropolitan Twin Cities.
Yeah, maybe. And we do have a caller, by the way.
Paul, let's get
him. You're live on the air, on point. Who's calling?
Hi, this is Mustafa calling from Minneapolis.
Hey, Mustafa, what's happening? What's happening, bro?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was listening, even though I was a little bit late. But I just want to bring up a few things that I want to share with you. First, you know, I attended a meeting at the Walker Church today, Communities Against Police Brutality.
Which Michelle Gross, right? Her organization?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and somebody brought up upcoming fundraising for Quincy Smith's family.
I'm sorry, give me that again. Somebody did what?
Brought up fundraising for the family of Quincy Smith.
Well, let me just say, and then we're on the air, and we have many listeners. Chat room and otherwise, if I were anyone, I would not take any action until they had conferred with the family and particularly the mother of Quincy Smith, Miss Betty Smith, because there's been no effort to help. There's been no effort to help that family out since the tragic events of 2008. And by the way, on that particular note, Mr. Allen and Masafa, the family of Quincy Smith have been given a court date of April 2nd, 2013 for the trial into the death of Quincy Smith. So I'm glad you called in with that, Masafa, because I am obligated to let our community know there has a trial date been set. But go ahead, you were
and also since you brought up the issue of corruption in our communities. I'm sure, especially Dan, heard about the city employee who was taking advantage of the training program in St. Paul for unemployed people.
And he was making $70,000 a year, right?
Yes. And when I see that on the Minneapolis forum, Minneapolis Issues forum on e-democracy, and they were trying to justify, almost everybody was trying to justify and say that because this is something, cultural thing that's acceptable in their culture, you know. And and when I responded, I say you can't justify, you know, somebody corrupted that you yourself hired, you know, in a corrupt way, and everything he does is all, you know, corrupted, you know. And but then they start to accuse me of being bigot or something, racist or something like that. So that was funny. And also, I want to bring up the issue.
By the way, let me just say this, Masafa. The gentleman that you're talking about, who was unfortunate from the Somali community, was an employee of the city of Minneapolis, and I've been made to understand that the city has taken no action against him as it pertains to something that's bordering on fraud. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what they do, you know, and they intentionally, you know, now, you know, intentionally try to corrupt the community, you know, every way they can. It's his friend of Artie Rayback. That's what somebody told me. And also there's this organization called African Development Center that's based on West Bank in Minneapolis.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, and you know the person who runs that program. It's another way of corrupting the community, you know, because I remember applying for some loans 3 or 4 years ago, and the only way get anything out of that is to know the people who run the organization and, you know, have some deal with them, you know. That's open, but they don't care. Nobody investigates them. I even contacted, you know, to IRS to bring some attention to it, but they don't care because it's, you know, that's what they want to see. But now the police, Minneapolis Police Department, they started this well-coordinated campaign to improve their image, because they've been having, you know, image problem lately. So they started this thing called Police Academy for Somali Youth.
Right, young people, basically on the age of 18. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was on the Star Tribune, and you know, then I after a little bit of investigation, I found out that they were paying cash, you know, kids to sign up for that, just so they can use, you know, to improve their image. And,
well,
not only that,
they encourage the young people to provide them with information. When I was a member of the Department of Justice's Police Community Relations Council here, we opposed that. They had tried that same program and approach in the African-American community. It was a disaster. We were listening to the discussion about doing the same thing in the Somali community. They weren't able to move it until they were able to get, you know, some of us out of the way. When I saw the presentation on the steps of City Hall, inside of City Hall, I knew clearly what that was, and I was kind of puzzled on why leadership in the Somali community had not spoken out on that program. That program actually is coordinated by Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the so-called leadership, they never serve the interests of the community. They, you know, they are in the pockets of people like Artie Rayback, and that's how they make a living. And about that, you know, because it happens to African American community too.
Oh yes,
and,
we do.
Yeah. So at the same time, they were running this campaign of you know, Police Academy for Somali Youth. They were also giving out some you know, some stuff to the homeless people. They were asking if the homeless person is a veteran. If they say yes, they give them some, you know. So it's a PR campaign.
Yes, right, yes, for a department that has been paying out a lot of money. And as we said, we did report, just what you called, a very interesting lawsuit filed by two white officers who themselves were very much involved in corrupt activities, who maintained that they were the target of retaliation. And what, unfortunately, black police in this town don't know is that they are identified in the court filings as the perpetrators, and the individuals that are threatening the life and the safety of these two good, quote-unquote, white officers. By the way, these two officers, Don, if you remember, just last year alone made $65,000 and $63,000 just in overtime to go with their $98,000 and $72,000 salaries. They made more money than their chief.
Yeah, exactly,
but we appreciate it. Anything else? Anything? We're getting ready to close it off.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Yeah, Mr. Allen, interesting observation. I don't think that the mayor and them thought anybody was paying attention to the cadet program. I'm glad to hear our friend Mustafa point that out. You know, there's not been the kind of in-depth discussion, and there won't be the kind of in-depth discussion, because what the cadet program, as we just said minutes ago, is all about is, oops, Homeland Security gathering information against the Somali community.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we have about 6 minutes left, and I'd just like to thank everybody for listening, but more importantly, you can continue listening and have a conversation tomorrow at 3 p.m. on Black Focus 2. That is Mr. Edwards' show. And Mr. Edwards, what's your topic for tomorrow?
Well, we have not opened it for the telephone lines. As I said, this is a pilot, and we want to kind of both some things out there, develop a listening audience. But the genesis is to take a look over the next 18 months at the plan that is afoot for the defeat of Barack Obama. And we'll be taking a look at different situations that take place in which there is an imbalance of reporting and analysis from the white-controlled media. And that will be our purpose. And if we feel that the program is growing as it pertains to our a level of interest with respect to our listening audience, then we may expand once we go to it. If we go to an hour, then we will go to telephone lines. But at this point, we're kind of doing the captive, 29 minutes of really taking a look at the plan that's afoot for the defeat of Barack Obama that no one really wants to talk about.
Okay, all right. And then also tomorrow on Black Focus, if you live in Minneapolis proper and you have Comcast, you can tune in to Minneapolis Television Network, which is Channel 17, that's MTN, Channel 17, at 5 p.m. for Black Focus. And, Mr. Edwards, your topic?
The prime topic is the lawsuit brought by Lieutenant Andy Smith and Sergeant Patrick King, two white police officers who, by the way, were very, very much involved in the investigation of black officers in 2006, 7, and 8. As we said three or four times intentionally on our program here, is that it is fascinating some of the things that both officers talk in terms of with respect to black officers. But what is fascinating, Don, is a letter from Chief Tim Dolan to both of these officers in February of 2010, Don, in which it's clear that Chief Tim Dolan is setting in place the lawsuit that these officers were to file 14 months later. I mean, the letter is fascinating. January 26, 2010, it is just unbelievable what Dolan does. And one of the people that he throws under the bus in this letter is one of his deputy chiefs, Gerlacher, who is being sued by King and Smith for retaliation and the role of black officers in the department with being involved, quote-unquote, in retaliating against them. In fact, one of the things that the chief says in his letter of 2010 is that Lieutenant Andy Smith needs to understand that there are a lot of people shooting at him. Now, that's an unusual statement between two law enforcement officers. That's very dangerous terminology.
I agree. And we also like to let people know that you can read the Independent Business News Network at IBNNnews.com. That's I-B as in boy, N-N news.com, as we're continuing our seven-part series on the Minneapolis Public Schools. And with next week, the final Part 7, actually 5, 6, and 7 will be next week. And in the conclusion of what we've talked about, and we think some people need to leave the room. Thanks for listening today, Mr. Edwards. As always, it's been great.
By the way, want to thank Mr. Smith on very short notice for calling in. We really appreciate it. And the best to Dr. Childs and his foundation.
Yes. And we'll be back next week. I'll be on assignment, Mr. Edwards. We've got to tell him that, and then you'll be handling the show next week.
Yes, we will. And we'll have a number of different issues that we'll be bringing to the attention of our listening audience. But once again, it's been a pleasure. I apologize for the voice, but this is a part of Minnesota weather.
Yes, it is. Thanks for listening, everyone. Appreciate it, and have a great, great day.